You're right. I'm not a wizard. Yes, I told them a lie. Lying is a crime against the Creator. Richard heaved a weary sigh. I did not do it to play at being a wizard. I did it to stop a war. It was the only way I could keep a lot of people from dying. It worked and no one was hurt. I would do the same thing again if it would prevent killing. Lying is wrong. The Creator hates lies. Does this Creator of yours like killing better? Sister Verna looked like she was ready to spit fire at him. He is everyone's Creator, not just my Creator, and he hates lies. Richard calmly appraised her heated expression. Tell you that himself, did he? Come right up and sit down next to you and say, Sister Verna, I want you to know I hate lies. She ground her teeth and growled the words, Of course not. It is written in books. Ah, Richard nodded. Well then, of course it is the truth. If it is written in books, then it has to be true. Everyone knows that if something is written down and attributed, then it must be true. Her eyes were fire. You treat lightly the Creator's words. He leaned toward her, some of his own heat surfacing. And you, Sister Verna, treat lightly the lives of people you consider heathens. She paused and with an effort calmed herself a little. Richard, you must learn that lying is wrong, very wrong. It is against the Creator, against what we teach. You are as much a wizard as an infant is an old man. Calling yourself a wizard when you are not is a lie, a filthy lie. It is a desecration. You are not a wizard. Sister Verna, I know very well that lying is wrong. I am not in the habit of going around telling lies, but in perspective, I consider it preferable to people being killed. It was the only way. She took a deep breath and nodded, causing the curls in her brown hair to spring up and down a little. Perhaps you are right, so long as you know that lying is wrong. Don't make a habit of it. You are no wizard. Richard stared at her as his grip tightened on the reins. I know I'm not a wizard, Sister Verna. I know exactly what I am. He gave the horse's ribs a squeeze with his legs, urging it ahead. I'm the bringer of death. Her hand darted out and snatched a fistful of his shirt sleeve, yanking him around in his saddle. He snugged the reins back as he was pulled around to her wide eyes. Her voice was an urgent whisper. What did you say? What did you call yourself? He gave her an even look. I'm the bringer of death. Who named you that? Richard studied her ashen face. I know what wearing this sword means. I know what it is to draw it. I know it better than any seeker before me has known. It is part of me. I am part of it. I used its magic to kill the last person who put a collar around my neck. I know what it makes me. I lied to the Bontoc because I didn't want people to be killed. But there is another reason. The Bontoc are a peaceful people. I did not want them to learn the horror of what it means to kill. I know all too well that lesson. You killed Sister Elizabeth. Perhaps you know too. Who named you the bringer of death? She pressed. No one. I named myself because that is what I do, what I am. I am the bringer of death. She released her grip on his shirt. I see. As she began turning her horse around, he called out her name in a commanding tone. It brought her to a halt. Why? Why do you want to know who named me that? Why is it so important? Her anger seemed to have vanished and left a shadow of fear in its passing. I told you I read all the prophecies at the palace. There is a fragment of one that contains those words, He is the bringer of death, and he shall so name himself. Richard narrowed his eyes. And what does the rest of the prophecy say? Did it also say that I will kill you and anyone else I have to get this collar off? She looked away from his glare. Prophecies are not for the eyes or ears of the untrained. With a sharp kick, she surprised her horse and sent it surging ahead. As he followed behind, Richard decided to let the matter drop. He didn't care about prophecies. They were nothing more than riddles as far as he was concerned, and he hated riddles. If something was important enough to need saying, why couch it in riddles? Riddles were stupid games, and not important. As he rode, He wondered how many people he was going to have to kill to get the collar off. 1 or 100. It didn't matter. His rage boiled at the thought of being led around by the Radahan. He gritted his teeth at the thought. His jaw muscles flexed at the thought. His fists tightened on the reins. Bringer of death. He would kill as many as it took. He would have the collar off, or he would die trying. The fury, the need to kill, surged through every fiber of his being. With a start, he realized he was calling forth the magic from the sword, even as it sat in its scabbard. He no longer had to hold the sword to do it. He could feel its wrath tingling through him. With an effort, he put it down and calmed himself. Besides the rage of hate from the sword, he also knew how to call forth its opposite side, its white magic. The sisters didn't know he could do that. He hoped he would have no reason to teach them. But if he had to, he would. He would have the collar off. He would use either side of the sword's magic or both to have the collar off his neck. When the time came. In the violet afterglow of twilight, Sister Verna brought them to a halt for the night. She had said nothing further to him. He didn't know if she was still angry, but he didn't really care. Richard walked the horses a short distance to a line of small willows at the bank of the creek and removed their bridles, replacing them with halters. His bay tossed her head, glad to have the bit out of her mouth. Richard saw it was an aggressive spade bit. Few bits were more cruelly punishing. People who used them, it seemed to him, were people who thought horses were nothing more than beasts humans had to conquer and control. He thought maybe they should have to have a bit in their mouths to see how they liked it. Properly trained, a horse needed nothing more than a jointed snaffle. If it was properly trained and given a little understanding, it didn't even need a bit. He guessed some people preferred punishment to patience. He reached up experimentally to stroke the horse's black-tipped ear. It lifted its head firmly away from his hand. "So," he muttered. "They like to twitch your ear, too." He scratched and patted the horse's neck. "I won't do that to you, my friend." The horse leaned against his scratching. Richard retrieved water in a canvas bucket and let each horse have only a few swallows, as they weren't cooled down. In one of the saddlebags he found brushes and took his time carefully currying each of them and then picking their hooves clean. He took longer than he needed to because he preferred their company to the sisters. After he finished, he cut a section of rind from the melon the Bontoc had given him and gave each horse a piece. Horses loved few things in life as much as a melon rind. Each showed eagerness for the treat. It was the first eagerness any of them had shown. After seeing the spade bits, he knew why. When he decided his chest hurt too much to stand around any longer, he went over to where Sister Verna sat on a small blanket and put his own blanket on the ground opposite her. He folded his legs as he sat and pulled a piece of the flat tava bread from his pack, more for something to do than because he was hungry. She accepted his offer of a piece. He cut up the melon and put the remaining rind aside, saving it for later. Richard offered Sister Verna a piece of melon. She looked at it coolly as he held it out. It was given under false pretenses. It was given as thanks for preventing a war. She took it at last, but not eagerly. "Perhaps." "I'll take the first watch if you wish," he offered. "There is no need to stand watch." He appraised her in the near darkness as he chewed a juicy piece of melon. "There are harthounds in the Midlands, other things too. I could draw another Skreeling. I think a watch would be wise." She pulled off a piece of tava bread without looking up. "You are safe with me. There is no need for a watch." Her voice was flat. It wasn't angry, but it wasn't far from it either. He ate in silence for a while and then decided to try to lighten the mood. He tried to make his voice sound cheerful, even though he felt no cheer. "I'm here. You're here. I'm wearing the Radahan. How about if you start teaching me to use the gift?" She looked up from under her eyebrows as she chewed. "There will be time enough to teach you when we reach the Palace of the Prophets." The air felt as if it had suddenly cooled. His anger heated. The sword's anger tugged at him to be released. Richard put it down. "As you wish." Sister Verna lay down on her blanket, pulling her cloak tightly around herself. "It's cold. Build a fire." He put the last bite of tava bread in his mouth and waited until he had swallowed before speaking softly, her eyes watching him. "I'm surprised you don't know more about magic, Sister Verna. There is a word that is magic. It can accomplish more than you might think. Maybe you have heard it before. It is the word please." He rose to his feet. "I'm not cold. If you want a fire, build it yourself. I'm going to go stand watch. I told you before, I will take nothing on faith. If we are killed in the night, it won't be without warning on my watch." He turned his back to her without waiting for a response. He didn't want to hear anything she had to say. Walking off a good distance through the dry grass, he found a mound of dirt around a groundhog hole and flopped down on top of it to watch, to think. The moon was up. It stared down at him and cast a pale silver light upon the surrounding empty land, enough light to enable him to see without any trouble. He looked out over the deserted countryside, brooding. As much as he tried to think of other things, it did no good. He could think of only one thing, Kaelin. He drew up his knees and wrapped his arms around them, after he had wiped some tears from his face. He wondered what she was doing, where she was, whether she would get Zed. He wondered if she still cared for him enough to go get Zed. The moon moved slowly across the sky as it stared down on him. What was he going to do? He felt lost. He pictured Kaelin's face in his mind. He would have conquered the world to see her smile at him, to bask in the warmth of her love. Richard studied her face in his mind. He pictured her green eyes, her long hair, her beautiful hair. At that thought, he remembered the lock of her hair she had put in his pocket. He pulled it out and looked at it in the moonlight. It was a circle she had pulled together and tied in the middle with the ribbon from her wedding dress, so that it reminded him of a figure eight turned sideways as he held it in his fingers. Turned sideways like that, it was also the symbol for infinity. Richard rolled the lock of hair between his finger and thumb, watching it as it spun. Kaelin had given it to him to remember her by, something to remember her by, because he would never see her again. Racking grief choked his breathing. He gripped the Aegeal as hard as he could until his fist shook with the effort. The pain from the Aegeal and his heartache twisted together into burning agony. He let it distort his perception until he could stand it no longer, and then he let it go on longer yet. Let it go on until he collapsed to the base of the dirt mound, barely conscious. He gasped for air. The pain had swept all the thoughts from his mind. If only for a few minutes his mind had been free of the anguish. He lay on the ground a long time recovering. When he was finally able to sit up once more, he found the lock of hair still in his hand. He stared at it in the moonlight, remembering what Sister Verna had said to him, that he had told the Bontoc a lie, a filthy lie. Those had been Kaelin's words. She had said that his love for her was a filthy lie. Those words hurt more than the Aegeal. "It's not a lie," he whispered. "I would do anything for you, Kaelin." But it wasn't good enough. Putting on the collar wasn't good enough. He wasn't good enough. Son of a monster, he knew what she wanted, what she really wanted. She wanted to be free of him. She wanted him to put on the collar so he would be taken away, so she would be free. "I would do anything for you, Kaelin," he cried. He stood up and looked out over the empty grassland. The dark horizon wavered in a watery blur.
"Anything, even this.
I set you free, my love." Richard threw the lock of Kaelin's hair as far as he could out into the night. He sank to his knees and fell face first to the ground, sobbing. He cried until he could cry no more. He continued to lie on the cold ground, groaning in agony, until he realized he was gripping the Aegeal again. He let it go, and at last sat up, flopping back in exhaustion against the dirt mound. It was over. Finished. He felt empty, dead. After a time, he rose to his feet. He stood a moment, and then slowly drew the Sword of Truth. Its ring was a soft song in the cold air. The anger came out with the steel, and he let it fill the void in him, rage freely through him. He welcomed the anger into himself, letting it fill him until he was submerged in its wrath. His chest heaved with lethal need. His eyes glided to where the sister lay sleeping. He could see the dark hump of her body as he approached silently. He was a woods guide. He knew how to stalk silently. He was good at it. His eyes carefully watched the ground as he moved fluidly, watched the sleeping form of Sister Verna as he closed the distance. He didn't hurry. There was no need to hurry. He had as much time as he needed. He tried to slow his breathing to keep from making noise. He was nearly panting with all-consuming fury. The thought of wearing a collar again fed the raging fire within him, fueled the inferno. Rage from the sword's magic seared through him like molten metal. Richard recognized the feeling all too well and gave himself over to it. He was beyond reason, beyond being stopped. Nothing short of blood would now satisfy the bringer of death. His knuckles were white on the hilt. His muscles knotted with restrained need, aching to be set free. But they wouldn't be restrained for long. The magic of the Sword of Truth screamed to do his bidding. Richard stood, a silent shadow over Sister Verna, looking down at her. The fury pounded in his head. He drew the sword along the inside of his forearm, wiping both sides in the blood, giving the steel a taste of it. The dark stain ran down the fuller, dripping from the tip. It ran wet and warm down his arm. His chest heaved as he gripped the hilt in both hands again. He felt the weight of the collar around his neck. The blade rose, glinting in the moonlight. He watched the sleeping sister at his feet. She was drawn up, almost into a ball. She was cold, and she shivered as she slept. He stood with the blade raised, watching her as he gritted his teeth and shook with raging need. Kalin didn't want him. Son of a monster. No, just monster. He saw himself standing over the sleeping woman, his sword in the air, ready to kill. He was the monster. That was what Kalin saw, and she had sent him away in a collar to be tortured, because he was a monster that needed to be collared, a beast. Tears ran down his face. The sword slowly sank until the tip touched the ground. He stood staring at the sister as she slept, shivering with the cold. He stood a long time, watching. Richard finally slid the sword quietly back into its scabbard. He retrieved his blanket and laid it over Sister Verna, tucking it carefully around her, being gentle so as not to wake her. He sat and watched until she stopped shivering, and then he lay down, wrapping himself in his cloak. He was exhausted, and he hurt all over, but he couldn't sleep. He knew they were going to hurt him. That was what the collar was for. When she got him to the palace, they were going to hurt him. What difference did it make? Memories danced and darted through his mind, memories of what Denna had done to him. He remembered the pain, the helpless agony, the blood. His blood. The visions went on and on. As long as he lived, he would never be able to forget them. It had only just ended, and now it was going to start all over again. There would never be an end to it. There was only one thought in all the turmoil of his mind that comforted him. He had learned from Sister Verna that he was wrong about the Keeper escaping. That meant Kalin was safe. She was safe, and that was all that really mattered. He tried to keep everything else away and think only of that. That thought allowed him to drift, at last, into sleep. Chapter 19. His eyes opened. The sun was just breaking the horizon. When he sat up, the pain from his burn caught his breath short. He put his hand over his shirt where the bandage was and held it there until the pain subsided. The residual effects of the Aegeal left the rest of him feeling as if he had been beaten with a club. He ached everywhere. He remembered from the time when Denna had trained him using the Aegeal, feeling a lot worse when he awoke, only to have her start using the Aegeal on him all over again. Sister Verna was sitting on her blanket, her legs folded beneath her, watching him as she chewed something. She had her cloak around her shoulders with the hood down. Her curly brown hair looked freshly brushed. She had neatly folded Richard's blanket and placed it back next to where he slept. She said nothing about it. Richard pushed himself to his feet, taking a moment to steady himself and stretch his hurting, cramped muscles. The sky was a clear, cold, deep blue. The grass smelled sweet and damp with dew. The vapor of his breath drifted lazily in the still, crisp air. "I'll go saddle the horses and we can be on our way." "Don't you want something to eat?" He shook his head. "I'm not hungry." "What happened to your arm?" she asked without looking up. There was dark, dried blood all down his arm and hand. "I was polishing my sword. It was dark. I cut myself. It's nothing."
"I see."
She glanced up as he scratched the stubble on his face. "I hope you are more careful when you shave your neck." Richard decided in that instant that as long as he was held captive in a collar, he would not shave. It would be his way of proclaiming to them that a collar was unjust, that he knew he was nothing more than their prisoner, and that he would not believe their spurious protestations to the contrary. There could be no justification for a collar, and there would be no compromising of that basic truth. None. Not ever. Richard glowered at the sister. "Prisoners don't shave." He turned toward the horses.
"Richard?"
He looked over his shoulder. "Sit down." Her voice was gentle, but he glared at the order nonetheless. She gestured to a place in front of her. "Sit down. I was thinking about what you said. You are here. I am here. Sit down, and I will begin teaching you how to control the gift." He was caught off guard. "Now? Here?"
"Yes. Come and sit."
He didn't really care about using the gift. He hated magic. He had only asked about it before because he had been trying to ease the tension. His eyes darted about before he finally sat and folded his legs, imitating the way she was sitting. "What do you want me to do?"
"There is much to teach you about using the gift. You will learn about balance in all things, especially magic. You must heed all our warnings and follow what we tell you. There are dangers to using magic. Perhaps you already know this from using the Sword of Truth, yes?"
Richard didn't move. She went on.
"There is greater danger in using the gift. It can have unanticipated results, results that can be disastrous."
"I have already used the gift. You said I used it in three specific ways."
She leaned forward a little. "And look what happened. It brought an unanticipated result. It resulted in you having that collar around your neck."
Surprised, Richard stared at her. "That wasn't a result of my using the gift. You were already looking for me. You said so. If I hadn't used the gift, the result would have been the same." Sister Verna slowly shook her head. Her eyes stayed on him.
"We had been looking for you for years. Something hid you from us. If you hadn't used the gift in the ways you did, I doubt we ever would have found you. Using the gift put that collar around your neck."
Years. They had been searching for him for years. All that time he had lived peaceably in Westland. First with his brother and father and Zed, and then on his own as a woods guide. They had been looking for him. And he never knew it. The thought gave him a chill. He brought it on himself by using magic. He hated magic. "Although I would agree that that is disastrous for me, how could you?"
"It's what you want."
"It is what we had to do. But you have threatened my life. You have threatened the lives of anyone else who keeps that collar around your neck. That would be all the Sisters of the Light. I never take the warnings of wizards, even untrained wizards, lightly. Your use of the gift, allowing us to find you, could end up being a disaster for all of us." He felt no satisfaction that his threats had not gone unnoticed. He felt nothing. "Then why are you doing this?" he whispered. "Making me wear it. To help you. You would have died otherwise. You have already helped me. The headaches are gone. You have my thanks. Why can't you let me go now?" "If the collar is removed too soon, before you learn enough of controlling the gift, they will come back. You will die. Then teach me so I can get it off." "We must be very cautious in teaching magic. You must have patience in your studies. We are careful in our training because we know more of the dangers of magic than you. And we don't want you to be hurt through ignorance. But that is not a problem for now because it will take time before you are advanced enough to really use the gift and risk these dangers.
as long as you adhere to what we say. You can have patience, yes?
I have no desire to use magic. I guess that could be construed as patience.
Good enough for now. We will begin then.
She squirmed a little, rearranging her legs.
There is a force within us all. It is the force of life. We call it Han.
Richard frowned.
Lift your arm.
He did as she asked.
That is the force of life. Given us by the Creator, it is encased within you. You have just used Han. Those with a gift can extend that force outside themselves. Such an external force is called a web. Those with a gift, like you, have the ability to cast a web. With the web, you can do things outside your body, much as the life force can do within your body.
How can that be?
Sister Verna picked up a small stone in her fingers. Here. My mind is using Han to make my hand lift the stone. My hand is not doing it of its own accord, but rather my mind is directing the life force to use my hand to accomplish what my mind wishes done. She set the stone back on the ground and folded her hands in her lap. The stone floated into the air and hung between them. I have just accomplished the same thing, only this time I did it by projecting the life force outside of my body. That is the gift.
You can do what a wizard can?
No, only some of it. That is how we are able to teach its use. We understand the feel of it. The sisters have some control of the life force and the gift, but nothing like a wizard who knows how to control his Han.
How do you get this life force to go outside your body?
That can't begin to be explained until you learn to recognize the force within yourself. Learn to touch the Han.
Why?
Because every person is different. Every person uses the force differently. It isn't used the same in any two people. Love is a form of Han being projected outside oneself into another. It is, though, a very mild, weak form. Even though love is universal, it is used and felt differently by all. Some use it to bring out the best of the Han in another. Some use it to bring out the best in themselves. Some use it to control, to dominate another. It can heal or wound. Once we understand how the gift works within you, how you use it, we can guide you through exercises called forms. The forms are a method of practice that will help you learn to control the power once it is free of your body. But for now, that is not important. First, you must learn to feel the Han within yourself before you can project it anywhere outside your body. After you are able to touch the Han, then we must discover what it is you can do with it. Every wizard is different and uses Han differently. Some can use it only through the use of mind, like wizards who study the prophecies. The use of their Han to understand prophecies is the major way the gift manifests itself within. It is their unique talent. Some can only use their Han to create beautiful, inspiring objects. Some use their Han to create things invested with magic. It is their unique talent, how they are able to express Han. Some are able to use their thoughts to influence the world about them, as I showed you when I lifted the rock. Some can do other things with Han. Some are able to do a little of everything.
Her frown returned.
The truth is of the utmost importance in this, Richard. You must be completely truthful in telling us how the Han feels within you. Lying will cause grave difficulty.
She relaxed a bit.
But first, you must be able to call upon your Han before we can discover what sort of wizard you are.
I told you, I don't want to be a wizard. I just want to learn to control the gift so I can stop the headaches and get this collar off my neck. You said I didn't have to be a wizard.
Controlling Han with the gift is what it means to be a wizard. When you learn to control it, you will be a wizard. That is the very essence of a wizard, but wizard is only a word. You should not fear a word. If you choose not to use the gift, that is your business. We can't force you, but a wizard you will be.
Teach me what I need to know, but I'll not be a wizard.
It is not something evil, Richard. It is just learning to know yourself. What you are capable of, what your talents are.
Richard sighed. Fine. So how do I control it?
Teaching control of the gift is a process taken in steps. I cannot explain it to you all at once because you would be unable to understand steps further along. Each step must be mastered before you can move on to the next. Before we can show you how to project the Han outside yourself, You must first recognize it, and then be able to touch it. Join with it within yourself. You must know what it is. You must be able to feel it. You must be able to reach for it, touch it, at will. You understand what I am saying, yes?
Richard nodded. A little, I guess. So what is it? How will I know it? What is it like to know it, to touch it?
Sister Verna's eyes became distant, seeming to go out of focus.
You will know it, she whispered. It is like seeing the light given off by the Creator. It is almost like joining with Him.
Richard watched her glazed expression. She seemed enthralled by what she was seeing within herself.
So how do I find it? He asked at last.
Her eyes focused on him.
You must search for it within yourself.
How?
You simply sit and search within. You put all other thoughts aside and seek the quiet, the calm within yourself. At first, it is helpful if you close your eyes, breathe slowly, evenly, and let yourself find the peace of nothingness. In the beginning, it helps to focus on a single thing in order to exclude all distracting thoughts.
A single thing? Like what?
She shrugged.
Whatever you wish. It is only a device to help you reach the end, not the end in itself. Everyone is different. Some use a single word, repeating it over and over to the exclusion of all else. Some use a mental picture of a simple object, using it to bring their mind into focus. Eventually, after you learn to recognize the power, to touch it, and become one with it, you won't need to focus on a device first. You will know the nature of Han, and be able to reach directly for it. It will become second nature to you. I know it sounds strange and difficult to you now, Richard, but in time you will find it as easy as it is for you to call forth the magic of your sword.
Richard had the uneasy feeling that he already knew what she was talking about. He could almost understand what she was saying. The words seemed strange, but they described something that was somehow familiar, yet different.
So you just wish me to sit and close my eyes and seek the quiet within?
She nodded.
Yes.
Sister Verna pulled her heavy brown cloak tighter around her shoulders.
You may begin.
Richard let out a breath.
All right.
He closed his eyes. It seemed his thoughts were scattering in all directions at once. He tried to herd them away. He tried to think of a word or a picture to focus on. He thought of Kaelin's name before anything else. He let it flow like liquid through his mind. Kaelin. He rejected the idea. He hated his magic and didn't want to associate her with anything he hated. Besides, the thought of her only brought pain, the pain of loving her enough to give her what she wanted, of having set her free. He thought of simple words, simple objects, but none held any interest for him. He calmed his mind and relaxed his breathing. He sought peace within himself, a calm center, the way he had always done when he needed to think of a solution to a problem. In the quiet, he tried to think of an image he could use. It popped into his mind, almost of its own accord. The Sword of Truth. It was already magic, and therefore he wouldn't be tainting it. It was a simple image. It seemed to fit the requirements. It was settled. It would be the Sword of Truth. Richard pictured it floating by itself on a field of black. He studied the details he knew so well, the polished blade with the fuller down its length, the aggressive, down-swept crossguards, the hilt covered in fine twisted silver wire with twisted gold wire woven through it, forming the raised letters of the word Truth. As he pictured it, fixing it in his mind, floating on a black background, something fought him. It was the background, not the sword. Around the edge of the black was white, forming the black into a square. Richard remembered it from before. It was one of the instructions in the Book of Counted Shadows, the book he had memorized when he was a boy. Clear your mind of all thought, and in its place put nothing but the image of white with a square of black in its center. It was part of the instructions for removing the covers from the boxes of Ordin and using the magic of the book. He had used that magic to show Darkin Rall how to remove the cover from a box to prove to him he truly did know the book. But why would it be in his mind now? Just a random memory forcing its way to the surface, he decided. It was as good a background as any to put the sword on. After all, he was trying to use magic. If his mind wanted to use it, it made no difference to him. He would let it be.
At that thought, the image of the sword and a square black background with white around it solidified and became still. Richard concentrated on the mental image of the sword against the black square with the white border. He concentrated as hard as he could. Something began to happen. The sword, the black square, and the white border all began to shimmer as if seen through heat waves. The solid form of the sword softened. It became transparent, and then it was gone. The background dissolved. He was looking into a place he knew. The Garden of Life at the People's Palace. Richard thought it odd, and somewhat annoying, that he wasn't able to hold his concentration enough to keep the image of the sword in his mind. The memory of the place where he killed Darkin Roll must have been so strong that it forced its way into his mind while he was relaxed. He was about to try to force the image of the sword to come back when he smelled something. Burned flesh. The stench made his nostrils flare. He almost gagged. His stomach turned sickeningly. He searched the image of the Garden of Life. It was like looking through a dirty window pane. There were bodies lying over the short walls, fallen, partly hidden in bushes, and sprawled on the grass. All were hideously burned. Some held weapons, swords or battle axes, in charred fists. Others lay with open hands, their weapons resting where they had tumbled as their owners fell dead. Choking apprehension swelled in Richard's chest. Richard saw the back of a white, glowing figure standing before the stone altar, before the three boxes of Ordon. One of the boxes stood open, as Richard remembered. The white figure with long blonde hair lifted his face away from the boxes. Darkin Rall turned and looked right into Richard's eyes. His blue eyes glowed. A smile spread slowly on his lips. It seemed as if Richard was helplessly pulled closer, closer to the grinning face. Darkin Rall lifted a hand to his mouth and licked the tips of his fingers.
"Richard," he hissed, "I'm waiting for you. Come watch while I tear the veil."
Unable to draw a breath, Richard slammed the image of the sword back into his mind, like slamming a door. He held it there rigidly, without the background, as he tried to make himself breathe. It was just a stray memory, and his fear, making him see the image, he told himself. He concentrated on the sword as he finally decided that what he had seen wasn't real, but maybe a manifestation of his heartache over Kaelin and his lack of sleep. That's what it had to be. It couldn't have been real. That would be impossible. He would have to be insane to believe it had been real. He opened his eyes. Sister Verna was sitting calmly watching him. She gave a heavy sigh. He thought maybe out of displeasure. Richard swallowed.
"I'm sorry. Nothing happened."
"Don't be discouraged, Richard. I did not expect anything to happen. It takes a long time to learn to touch the Han. It will happen when it happens. There is no way to rush it. It does no good to push too hard. It comes from finding the inner peace, and not by force." "That is long enough for today." "A few minutes? That's all you want me to try?" She lifted an eyebrow. "You have had your eyes closed for over an hour." He stared at her and then glanced to the sun. It seemed to have jumped up into the sky. Over an hour? How was that possible? A tingle of apprehension spread through him. She cocked her head. "It seemed only a few minutes to you?" Richard stood. He didn't like the frown on her face.
"I don't know. I wasn't paying any attention. I guess it did feel like an hour."
He started packing the few things he had taken out. The more he thought about what he had seen, the more unreal it seemed. It began to feel like a dream after waking, the fear, the hard edges, the reality fading. He began to feel foolish for being so frightened by a dream. A dream? He hadn't been sleeping. How could he have been dreaming when he was awake? Maybe he hadn't been awake. He had been dead tired. Maybe while he was sitting there, concentrating on the sword, he had fallen asleep. That's how he went to sleep sometimes, by concentrating on something until he drifted off. That was the only explanation for the time going so fast. He was asleep, and the rest of it had been a dream. He let out a heavy breath. He felt silly for having been so frightened, but he felt relieved, too. When he turned, Sister Verna was still watching him. Do you wish to shave now? Now that I have shown you, I only wish to help you?
Richard straightened. I told you, prisoners don't shave.
You are not a prisoner, Richard.
He stuffed his blanket into his pack, tucking in the corners to make it fit. Will you remove the collar? Her answer was slow in coming, but firm.
No, only when it is time.
May I leave and go where I wish?
She sighed impatiently.
No, you must go with me. And if I don't, if I try to leave you? Her eyes narrowed a little.
Then I would be forced to prevent it. You would find you did not like that.
Richard nodded solemnly. That fits my definition of a prisoner. As long as I'm a prisoner, I will not shave. The horses nickered at his approach, their ears prickling toward him. Sister Verna eyed them suspiciously. He returned the greeting with gentle words and a stiff scratch to the side of each horse's neck. Taking out the brushes, he gave each a quick grooming, paying particular attention to their backs. Sister Verna folded her arms. Why are you doing that? You groomed them last night.
Because horses like to roll in the dirt. They could have something under where the saddle goes. Feels kind of like walking around with a rock in your boot, only worse. It could give them a sore, and then we won't be able to ride them. So I like to check them over before I put their saddles on.
When he finished, he cleaned the brushes against each other. What are their names?
Sister Verna gave a sour frown.
They don't have names. They are just horses. We don't give names to dumb animals.
He pointed with the curry brush at the chestnut gelding.
You don't even give your own a name?
He is not my own. They all belong to the Sisters of the Light. I ride whichever one is available. The bay you rode yesterday is the one I rode before you came with me, but it makes no difference. I simply ride whichever one is available.
Well, from now on, they're going to have names. Avoids confusion. Yours is the Chestnut, and he will be Jessup. My bay will be Bonnie, and the other bay will be Geraldine.
Jessup, Bonnie, and Geraldine, she huffed. No doubt from The Adventures of Bonnie Day.
Glad to hear you read something other than prophecies, Sister Verna.
As I told you before, ones with the gift who come to the palace are brought when they are young. One boy brought The Adventures of Bonnie Day with him. I read it to see if it was appropriate for young minds and to see if it was of good moral teachings. I found it to be a preposterous story of three people who would have had no trouble if one of them had been blessed with brains.
Richard smiled a little. Perfect names for dumb animals, then. She scowled at him.
It was a book of no intellectual value, no value of any kind. I destroyed it.
Richard's smile tried to fade, but he didn't let it. My father, well, the man who raised me as his son, and who I think of as my father, George Cypher, well, he traveled often. One time when he came home, he brought me The Adventures of Bonnie Day as a gift for learning to read. It was the first book I ever had. I read it many times. It brought me pleasure and made me think each time I read it. I, too, thought the three heroes did foolhardy things, and I always vowed not to repeat the same mistakes they made. You may have seen no value in it, but it taught me things. Things of value. It made me think. Perhaps, Sister Verna, that is something you don't like your students to do?
He turned away from her and started taking apart the bridles. My real father, Darkin Rawl, came to my house just this autumn looking for me. He wanted to cut my belly open and read my entrails, to kill me, just as he killed George Cypher.
He stole a quick glance over his shoulder. Anyway, I wasn't at home, and while he was waiting for me, he tore that book apart and threw the pages all around. Maybe he didn't want me learning any of its lessons or thinking for myself either.
Sister Verna didn't say anything, but he could feel her eyes watching him take the bridles apart, undo the headstalls and reins from the bits. After he had them apart, he packed the headstalls away and flipped the reins over his shoulder. He could hear her let out a little angry breath.
I'll not be calling horses by names.
Richard stacked the three spade bits atop one another on the dirt, where the horses had pawed the ground bare.
You might want to reconsider the wisdom of that, Sister Verna.
She stepped out to the side of him, where he could see her, pointing at the ground.
What are you doing? Why did you take the bridles apart? What are you doing with those bits?
Richard drew the sword.
Its distinctive ring filled the cold, bright air. The rage of the magic instantly flooded through him. "I'm destroying them, sister." With a scream of fury, and before she could make a move, he brought the sword down with a powerful swing. The tip whistled through the air. The blade shattered the three bits into flying shards of hot metal. She rushed forward, her cloak flapping.
"What is the matter with you? Have you lost your mind? We need those bits to control the horses."
"Spade bits can be cruel. I won't allow you to use them."
"Cruel? They are just stupid beasts. Beasts that need to be controlled."
"Beasts," he muttered, shaking his head and sliding his sword back into its scabbard. He snugged up the halter on Bonnie and began attaching the reins to the side rings. "You don't need a bit to control a horse. I'll teach you how. Besides, without a bit in their mouths, they can eat while we travel. They'll be happier that way."
"That's dangerous. Spade bits give you control over a headstrong beast."
He arched an eyebrow to her. "With horses, as with many other things, sister, you often get what you expect to get."
"Without bits, you don't have any control."
"Nonsense. If you ride properly, you control with your legs and body. You just have to teach the horse to pay attention and trust you." She stepped close, commanding his attention.
"That's foolish and dangerous. There are dangers out here. If you get into a dangerous situation and the horse is frightened, it could bolt. Without a spade bit, you won't be able to stop a runaway horse."
He halted what he was doing and looked to her intense brown eyes. "Sometimes, sister, we get the opposite of what we intend. If we do get in a dangerous situation and you get over-anxious and jerk too hard on a spade bit, you could tear the horse's mouth. If you do that, the pain, terror, and anger can be so intense that he won't respond to anything you do. He won't understand. He will only know that you hurt him and that you're hurting him more with each pull on the reins. You'll be the threat. He will throw you in a heartbeat. Then, if he is simply frightened, he will bolt. Worse, he could be angry. Angry horses are dangerous. In trying to avoid danger with a spade bit, you will have brought it upon yourself." He held her startled eyes in his gaze. "If we get to a town or something and can find a jointed snaffle bit, I'll let you use that. But I will not allow you to put a spade bit in any horse's mouth as long as I'm with you." She took a deep breath, releasing it carefully as she folded her arms again.
"Richard, we can't control them without a bit. It's that simple."
He gave her a one-sided smile. "Sure we can. I'll teach you. The worst thing that can happen without a bit is that he can run away with you, and you'll have a time of stopping him, but sooner or later you will be able to. Your way, you and the horse could be hurt or killed." He turned and scratched Bonnie's neck. "First thing you have to do is make friends with them. They have to trust you not to hurt them or let anything happen to them, though you are in charge. If you're their best friend, they won't let anything happen to you. They'll do what you ask. It's surprisingly easy. All you have to do is show them a little respect and kindness along with a firm hand. If they're going to be your friend, they need names to get their attention, and so they know when you're talking to them." He scratched a little harder, the horse leaning into it. "Isn't that right, Bonnie? You're a good girl, aren't you?" "Sure you are." He looked over his shoulder at the sister. "Jessup likes it when you scratch under his chin. Give it a try. Show him you want to be friends." He gave her a humorless grin. "Like it or not, sister, we don't have the bits anymore. You need to learn a new way." Sister Verna stared at him with a cold look. At last she unfolded her arms and went over to the chestnut gelding. She stood in front of him a moment and then reached out and stroked the side of his head, finally moving her hand under his jaw to give him a scratch. "There's a good boy," she said in a flat tone. "You may think horses are dumb, Sister Verna, because they don't understand most of your words, but they understand tone of voice. If you want him to believe you, you had better at least pretend you're sincere." She moved her hand up and rubbed his neck.
"You are a dumb beast," she said in a syrupy, sweet voice.
"Happy?" she snapped over her shoulder. "As long as you're nice to him. You need to gain his trust. Horses aren't as dumb as you think. Look at the way he's standing. He doesn't trust you. From now on, I'm assigning you to Jessup. You'll tend to all his needs. He must come to depend on you to trust you. I'll take care of Bonnie and Geraldine.
You'll be the only one to groom Jessup, and you will do it after he is ridden, and before he is ridden the next morning.
Me? Most certainly not. I'm in charge. You are quite capable of grooming all three, and will do so.
This has nothing to do with who's in charge. Among other things, grooming helps build a bond between you and the horse. I already told you, the bits are gone. You need to learn a new way. I need to teach you how for your own safety. He handed her a set of reins. Tighten up the halter and attach these to the ring here. While she was doing it, he cut up the leftover melon rind into small pieces. Talk to him. Call him by name and let him know you like him. It doesn't matter what you say. You can describe what you're doing if you want, but make it sound like he's important to you. If you have to, pretend. Treat him like he's one of your little boys. She glared over her shoulder at him, then turned back to hooking up the reins. She started talking, softly, so Richard couldn't hear her, but he could tell it was gentle. When she finished, he handed her some of the pieces of melon rind. Horses love this. Give him a piece. Tell him what a good boy he is. The idea is to change his feelings about having the reins on. Let him know it's going to be pleasant instead of that bit he hates. Pleasant, she repeated in a flat tone. Sure. You don't need to show him how much you can hurt him to make him do as you wish. That's counterproductive. Just be firm but gentle. The idea is to try to win him over with kindness and understanding, even if it isn't sincere, and not by using force. Richard's smile vanished, and he let his features slide into a glare. He leaned closer to her as she stood looking up at him. You should be able to do that, Sister Verna. You seem pretty good at it. Just treat him like you treat me. Her stunned expression hardened. I swore on my life to bring you back to the Palace of the Prophets. When they see you at last, I fear I may be hung for doing my duty. She turned and gave the melon rind to the eager horse, stroking his neck and encouraging him with motherly pats. There's a good fellow. Good boy. You like that, Jessup? Good boy. Her voice was heavy with compassion and tenderness. The horse liked it. Richard knew it lacked sincerity. He didn't trust her and wanted her to know it. He didn't appreciate people thinking they were so easily fooling him. He wondered if her attitude toward him would change, now that he had let her know he hadn't swallowed her act. Kaelin had told him that Sister Verna was a sorceress. He had no idea what she was capable of, but he had felt the web she had thrown around him in the spirit house. He had seen the fire she started with a thought. She could have easily started a fire the night before without telling him to do so. He had the strong feeling she could break him in half with her Han, if she so chose. She was just trying to train him, get him accustomed to doing as she said without thinking. Just like training a horse, or a beast, as she had called it. He doubted she had any more respect for him than she did for her horses. But instead of using a spade bit to control him, she had the Rada Han around his neck, and that was much worse. But he would have it off when the time came. Even if Kaelin didn't want him and had sent him away, he would have it off. While Sister Verna was making friends with Jessup, Richard started saddling the horses. How far to the Palace of the Prophets? It's a long way to the southeast, a long and difficult way. Well, then we have plenty of time to teach you how to handle Jessup without a bit. You won't have as hard a time as you think. He will defer to and follow Bonnie. Bonnie is the dominant horse. The male is dominant. Richard lifted the saddle up onto Bonnie. A mare is always at the top of the hierarchy. Dams teach and protect the foals. Their influence lasts a lifetime. There isn't a stallion a mare can't intimidate and chase away. Mares can run off any unwanted stallion. A stallion may drive a predator away from the herd, but a mare will chase it and try to kill it. A male horse will always defer to the authority of the lead mare. Bonnie is the lead mare. Jessup and Geraldine will follow her and do as she does, so I'll take the lead. Just follow me and you won't have any trouble. She swung herself up into the saddle. The beam in the central hall. It's the highest. Everyone will be able to see it. What are you talking about? She gave him a solemn look. The beam in the central hall. That is where they will probably hang me from. Richard swung up into his saddle. It's your choice, sister. You don't have to take me there. She sighed. Yes, I do. She gave him her most gentle and concerned look. He thought it quite convincing, if a little strained.
Richard, I only wish to help you. I want to be your friend. I think you need a friend right now. Very much.
Richard bristled. That is a kind offer, Sister Verna, but I decline. You seem a little too quick to put that knife you keep up your sleeve in the back of your friends. Did it bother you at all, Sister Verna, to steal the life from Sister Elizabeth, a friend and companion? It didn't seem so. I decline to offer you my friendship, sister. Or my back. If you're sincere in your wish to be my friend, then I would advise you to truly commit to it before I call upon you to prove it. When the time comes, you are only going to get one chance. There are no shades of gray in this matter. Only friends and enemies. Friends don't keep a friend in a collar and hold them prisoner. I intend to have this collar off. When I decide it's time, any friend will help me. Those who try to stop me won't be my friends. They will be dead enemies. Sister Verna shook her head and urged Jessup in behind him as he started away.
The beam in the central hall. I'm sure of it.
Chapter 20. The sound of her heart pounded in her ears. Struggling to control her panicked breathing, she ducked behind the fat trunk of an old pine, pressing up against the rough bark. If the sisters had discovered she was following them... The dark, damp air filled her lungs in ragged pulls. Her lips moved soundlessly with prayers to the Creator, beseeching protection. With eyes as big as gold pieces, she stared into the darkness and swallowed, trying to wet her throat. The dark form glided silently closer. She could just see it as she peeked out past the edge of the tree. She suppressed the urge to scream, to run, and prepared herself to fight. She reached for the sweet light. She embraced her Han. The shadows slipped closer, hesitating, searching. One more step, just one more, and she would spring. She would have to do it right, make sure there was no chance to raise an alarm. She had to be fast, and it would take different kinds of webs, all thrown at once. But if she could be precise and quick, there would be no chance of a scream, no alarm, and she would know for sure who it was. She held her breath. The dark shape finally took another step. Spinning out from behind the tree, she threw the webs. Cords of air, strong as dock line, whipped around the form. As the mouth came open, she jammed a solid knot of air into it, gagging it before it had a chance to cry out. She slumped a little with relief when no sound came forth, but her heart still raced nearly out of control as she gasped for air. With an effort, she managed to bring calm back to her mind, although she maintained a firm grip on her Han, fearful to let her caution slip. There could be others about. She took a deep breath and stepped closer to the immobilized shape. When she was close enough to feel its breath on her face, she extended her palm up and, in its center, released a thread of fire to light a tiny flame just enough to see the face.
Jedediah,
she whispered. She pressed her hand to the back of his neck, her fingers feeling the smooth, cool metal of the Radahan, and leaned her forehead against his as she closed her eyes. Tears ran down her cheeks.
Oh, Jedediah, you gave me such a fright.
She opened her eyes and looked up at his terrified face, lit by the tiny flickering flame.
I will release you, she whispered softly, but you must be very quiet, promise?
He nodded as best he could, considering how tightly she had him bound. She slipped off the webs, pulling out the gag of air. Jedediah sagged with relief.
Sister Margaret, he whispered in a shaky voice, you very nearly made me soil myself.
She laughed soundlessly.
I'm sorry, Jedediah, but you very nearly did the same to me.
She snipped the thin thread of Han, fueling the small flame, and they both sank to the ground, leaning against one another, recovering from the fright. Jedediah, several years younger, was bigger than she, a handsome young man. Painfully handsome, she thought. She had been assigned to him when he had first come to the palace and she had been a novice. He had been eager to learn and had studied hard. He had been a pleasure from the first day. She knew others had been difficult, but not Jedediah. He had done everything she had asked of him. She had only to ask, and he threw himself into it. Others thought he was more eager to please her than to please himself in what he did, but none could deny that he was a better student than any other and was becoming a better wizard, and that was all that mattered. This was one area where the results were what counted, not the method, and she had quickly earned her full sisterhood for the way she had brought him along. Jedediah had been more proud of her than she had been of herself when she had been named a Sister of the Light. She was proud of him, too. He was probably the most powerful wizard the palace had seen in 1,000 years.
"Margaret," he whispered, "what are you doing out here?"
"Sister Margaret," she corrected. "No one is around." He kissed her ear.
"Stop that,"
she scolded. The tingle from the kiss ran all the way down her spine. He had added a wisp of magic to the kiss. Sometimes she wished she hadn't taught him that, but other times she ached to have him do it.
"Jedediah, what are you doing here? You have no business following me, following a sister out of the palace."
"You're up to something. I know you are. And don't you try to tell me you're not. Something dangerous. At first, I was only a little concerned, but when I realized you were headed out into the Hagen Woods, I became frightened for you. I'm not going to let you go wandering into a dangerous place like this. Not by yourself, anyway. Not without going along to protect you."
"Protect me?" she whispered harshly. "Might I remind you of what just happened? You were helpless in a heartbeat. You weren't able to fight off even a single one of my webs. You weren't able to break one of them. You were hardly able to touch your Han, much less use it effectively. You have a lot to learn before you are wizard enough to go around protecting anyone. It's all you can do at this point to keep from stepping on your own feet." The rebuke silenced him. She didn't like to reprimand him so harshly, but this was far too dangerous for him to be involved in, if what she suspected were true. She feared for him and didn't want him hurt. The things she had said weren't entirely true, either. He was already more powerful than any sister, when he could bring everything together properly, even though that wasn't often. Already there were sisters who were afraid to push him too far. She could feel him look away. "I'm sorry, Margaret," he whispered. "I was afraid for you."
Her heart ached at the hurt in his voice. She kept her head close to his, so they could speak in soft whispers.
"I know you are, Jedediah, and I appreciate your concern, I really do, but this is sister business."
"Margaret, the Hagen Woods are a dangerous place. There are things in here that could kill you. I don't want you in here." The Hagen Woods were indeed dangerous. They had been for thousands of years, and had been left that way by decree of the palace, as if they could do anything about it. It was said that the Hagen Woods were a training ground for a very special kind of wizard. That kind of wizard was not sent there, but went in by choice, because he wanted to, craved to, needed to. But that was only what was said. She knew of no wizard going off to spend time in the Hagen Woods, at least not for the last few thousand years. If it was true, any ever did. The tales said that in ancient times there were wizards of that kind, with that much power, and that they went into the Hagen Woods. Few ever came out, it was also said, but there were rules, even to this place. "The sun didn't set while I was here. I came after dark. If you don't let the sun set on you in the Hagen Woods, you can leave, and I don't intend to stay long enough for the next sun to set on me. It's safe enough, for me anyway. I want you to go home right now." "What's so important that you would go in here? What are you doing? I expect an answer, Margaret, a truthful answer. I won't be put off. There is danger for you in this, and I won't be put off." She fingered the finely worked gold flower she kept on a chain around her neck. Jedediah had made it for her himself, not with magic, but with his own hands. It was a morning glory, meant to represent his awakening awareness of the gift, an awareness she had helped to blossom. That little gold flower meant more to her than anything else she had. She took up his hand and leaned against him. "All right, Jedediah, I will tell you. But I can't tell you all of it. It's too dangerous for you to know everything."
"What's too dangerous? What can't you tell me?"
"Be quiet and listen, or I will send you back right now, and you know I can do it." His other hand went to the collar.
"Margaret, you wouldn't do that. Tell me you wouldn't do that. Not since we have been..."
"Hush!" He fell silent. She waited a moment to be certain he was going to stay hushed before she went on.
I have suspected for a time that some of the ones with the gift who have gone away or died have not done so as it has been put to us. I think they have been murdered.
What? Keep your voice down, she whispered angrily. Do you want to get us killed, too?
He fell silent once more.
I think something awful is going on in the Palace of the Prophets. I think some of the sisters murdered them.
He stared at her in the darkness.
Murdered? By sisters? Margaret, you must be crazy to even suggest such a thing.
Well, I'm not. But everyone would think I was, if I were to say such a thing aloud inside the palace walls. I have to figure out a way to prove it. He thought a moment.
Well, I know you better than anyone, and if you say it's true, then I believe you. I'll help. Maybe we could dig up the bodies, find something to go against what was said about their deaths, find somebody who saw something. We could carefully question the staff. There are ones I know who...
Jedediah, that's not the worst of it.
What could be worse?
She held the gold flower in the crook of a finger and rubbed her thumb against it. Her voice came even lower than before.
There are sisters of the dark in the palace.
Even without being able to see him in the darkness, she knew bumps were running up his arms. The night bugs chirped around them as she watched the dark shape of his face.
Margaret, sisters of the... That can't be. There is no such thing. That is only a myth, a fable. It is no myth. There are sisters of the dark in the palace. Margaret, please don't keep saying that. You could be put to death for making an accusation like that. If you accuse a sister of that and can't prove it, you would be put to death. And you can't prove it because it isn't possible. There is no such thing as a sister of the...
He couldn't even say the words. The thought of it frightened him so much he couldn't even say it out loud. She knew his fear. She had felt it herself until she had happened on things she could no longer ignore. She wished she hadn't gone to see the prophet that night, or at least not listened to him. The prelate had been angry that Margaret wouldn't give the prophet's message to one of her aides. When she had finally granted an audience, the prelate had only stared blankly at her and asked what the pebble in the pond was. Margaret didn't know. The prelate had lectured her sternly for bothering her with Nathan's nonsense. Margaret had been furious at Nathan when he had denied remembering giving any such message for the prelate.
I wish it were as you say, but it is not. They're real. They're among us. They are in the palace.
She watched the dark shadow of him a moment.
That's why I'm out here to get proof.
How are you going to do that?
They're out here. I followed them. They come out into the Hagen Woods to do something. I'm going to find out what.
His head turned about, searching the darkness.
Who? Which sisters? Do you know which ones?
I know. Some of them anyway.
Which ones are they?
Jedediah, I can't tell you. If you knew, and you made even the slightest mistake, you would not be able to defend yourself. If I'm right and they are really sisters of the dark, they would kill you for knowing. I can't bear the thought of you being hurt. I won't